Most believers long to be more effective in our praying. Some going to considerable length in the hope that it will make a difference. Stories told of a businessman who needed millions of pounds to clinch an important deal, who went to church to pray for the money. By chance, he knelt alongside a woman who was praying for £100 to pay off an urgent debt. The businessman took out his wallet and pressed the £100 into the woman's hand. Overjoyed, she got up and left the church. The businessman then closed his eyes and resumed his praying. "And now, Lord, that I have your undivided attention..." Somehow, I don't think that particular attitude is going to help very much. And the Bible doesn't present us with an instant formula to increase the effectiveness of our prayers. It does, however, encourage us to be persistent. All kinds of areas of life where persistence is generally required. And the scriptures speak in a number of places of the need for particular persistence in our faith. Being willing to stand firm, even amidst the face of significant adversity or discouragement. And Jesus' teaching has a particular focus on several occasions on this need for persistence in our prayers. In Luke chapter 11, he's made the comparison with our praying and a man whose friend arrives at midnight asking to borrow some supplies to enable him to feed an unexpected guest. At first, the householder tells him to go away. He doesn't want his sleeping children disturbed in the way that it would be in a very small house in those days. But Jesus says, if the friend persists in his request, eventually it will be granted. Jesus then repeats the general encouragement to persist in prayer that he taught in the Sermon on the Mount. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened unto you. And then a few chapters later, Luke chapter 18, we have a second little story with an almost identical feel to it. About this time, a widow seeking justice and coming up against an indifferent judge who simply can't be bothered to help. But she doesn't give up. She persists in her requests for justice until, at last, even the unrighteous judge is moved to act to help her. At first, it seems a strange parable to compare God with an important office holder who needs to be badgered into doing what he's meant to. As a master storyteller, though, Jesus would have chosen the details of his story with considerable care. Let's focus to begin with on the cry of the woman. We don't actually know anything of the detail about her need. Jesus did choose to picture the person seeking justice, though, as a widow. Then, as now, I guess there were some widows who were wealthy and influential. But in the main, in Bible times, being a widow sadly meant being poor and powerless, with no great influence or money to grease the wheels of justice when the system was in danger of getting stuck. The disadvantages of her situation, though, brought one key asset, her desperate need making her extremely persistent. Thankfully, there have been very few occasions in my life when I felt the need to seek justice for myself. About 10 years ago, though, we had a washing machine that had broken down. The person we got in took it away, got me to pay £50, and then stopped answering my phone calls. It never came back. He was, as they say, known to trading standards for that kind of thing, but there was little that could easily be done about the situation. And I gave up pursuing it. The reason? Well, I was annoyed, but I was far from desperate. Being conned out of £50 was a bad thing, but it hadn't made us destitute. Life's too short, I said, and moved on. Well, for the most part, I moved on. I'm still telling the story 10 years later. Jesus, though, pictures a widow who doesn't give up that easily. She may well have been acting out of desperation. Obtaining justice from those who'd wronged her may well have appeared to be the only way of getting her life back on an even keel. And so she determinedly persists in her appeal for justice. There are several details to notice about the way Jesus paints the cry of the widow. Several details, too, which have been chosen to highlight the particular coldness of the judge. To begin with, we're told he has no respect for people. That undermines the whole point of appointing someone as a judge, namely the conviction that each person matters, that enabling everybody to get a fair deal out of life is important, and that injustice isn't just an abstractly bad thing, but it's bad because of the damage that's done to real individuals. But as well as being told that this person, this judge, had no respect of others, we're also told he doesn't fear God either. If a judge's commitment to ensure a fair deal to the individuals who are before him is in doubt, well, an awareness that there's a God looking down on their work is at least going to provide an alternative motivation for their doing the right thing. Unfortunately, the judge in Jesus' story doesn't have the incentive of fearing God to make him do his job properly either. And we might presume many legitimate cries to him to step in and right profound wrongs go unheeded. In the case that Jesus' parable is focused on, the judge only acts as he should because he wants to stop being badgered by the widow's persistent appeals to him. Even when he does the right thing, you see, it's only really because it will make his own life easier. And almost every reader of this parable will have wondered why Jesus chooses to paint a picture of such a bad judge. After all, the point of the story is to encourage us in our prayer to God. Surely we're not meant to assume that God is indifferent and motivated solely by what will make his life the easiest. And of course, we're not meant to draw that conclusion. On the contrary, Jesus is making the point by means of a contrast. He's saying, if even a crooked and self-centered judge will eventually respond to a powerless widow's request, well, surely we shouldn't doubt that a good and loving and perfect God will hear and respond to our prayers. Jesus, I guess, might have painted the judge as a basically good person, but a bit busy, a bit overwhelmed by the number of appeals that he had to hear. And if he'd done that, we might have been in danger of thinking it as rather too close a picture of what God was like, thinking that God's delay in responding to us was because, well, he was doing his best, but he couldn't keep up with all the prayers that were being said to him. By painting the judge as a thoroughly bad person, who nonetheless out of his own self-interest may well accede to a widow who's persistent enough, well, every reader will know we can't possibly be meant to see God as being like that. And that can hopefully lead us to focus on the single lesson that Jesus wants to draw from this little story, namely the need for persistence in our prayers. And then perhaps a second reason why the story is constructed in the way that it is simply to engage with the reality that prayer can be difficult, prayer can be disheartening, and that perseverance is going to be necessary. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke on the parable of the prodigal son, which is one of my favourite parts of the Bible. The picture there of the waiting father who eagerly rushes to greet his son and to forgive him is one of the most powerful images of God that's given in the whole of the Bible. The reality is, though, particularly as we progress in the Christian life, our relationship with God doesn't always feel quite as easy with that. For most believers, there are times when we struggle with the question as to why so many of our prayers aren't answered in the way that we long for them to be. We might reckon we think we're praying for the right kind of things. We think we're focusing on the progress of God's kingdom, praying for people to come to faith, for God's truth to be better known, for a fairer world where the hungry are fed. Yet we wonder, why isn't there much progress in seeing our prayers fulfilled? Now, answering that question fully would require another sermon, looking at other parts of the Bible which do engage more in the why of that question. Because this parable doesn't really touch on giving an explanation for that. Other parts of the Bible explain to us how God's delaying bringing in his kingdom in its fullness is sometimes a sign of his mercy and his grace in giving more people time to repent and get on board with his kingdom. Other parts of scripture speak of how having to wait is sometimes good for us in building character. But the basic question about how we respond when our prayers seem largely unanswered, should we keep going or not, or just assume that God doesn't want these things to happen after all, well, that's very clearly addressed by Jesus in these verses. With a resounding yes, the message is clear: carry on praying. It's very easy, you see, to lose heart in our prayers. To think we've asked for the same kind of thing, maybe in exactly the same terms, hundreds of times before, wondering if there's any point in repeating ourselves. Now, I guess it's true, in some cases, we may over time come to realize that the reason we haven't got anywhere with some of our prayers is that they're rather too selfish, focusing rather too much on our own comfort and happiness and that of our immediate circle. But others of our prayers, we may feel, are rightly focused on the needs of others, of God's will being done here on earth as it is in heaven. And in that case, Jesus is here encouraging us to persist with those prayers, just as the widow in the parable persisted in her appeal to the judge. We need to persevere in our corporate praying together as well when we're assembled in church. For the first half of my adult life as a worshipping Christian, a recurrent feature in church prayers was, well, first of all, for the end of apartheid in South Africa, which thankfully happened. And then we prayed, as we still do, for peace. And you could say, thankfully, the majority of us have now not known what it is for our nation or our world to be fully at war. Even our repeated prayers for Northern Ireland those years ago seem largely to have resulted in a measure of peace there anyway. We thank God too that despite the many pressures that bear against the church by our increasingly secular world, nonetheless, God's people are continuing to proclaim the love of Christ in word and deed. And globally, that the church is growing faster than ever. There are, though, of course, many areas where our prayers haven't brought quite the answers that we long for. Many parts of the world which remain at war or where new conflicts have erupted. Many churches in the UK which are struggling, some even having to close down. You might imagine if we got in outside consultants who knew nothing of the Christian faith to evaluate our church life, they might say, your prayers don't always appear to have the effect you want. Maybe you should cut that part of the Sunday service and replace it with a more upbeat hymn. And scrap the monthly prayer meeting while you're at it. We know that in every human relationship, too much nagging can be counterproductive. We might think we'd be better to ease off in our coming to God in prayer. Jesus, though, speaks very clearly in this parable of the virtue of persistence in our praying. A man called Adam Baum put it this way: pray on when rough and dark your pathway and you cannot see the light, when every spark of hope has vanished and bright day has turned to night. Pray on, for God does surely hear you, noting well each sad request. Pray then in faith, truly believing that he always gives what's best. Echoing Jesus' encouragement to persevere in our prayer.